In 1 Peter 1, the Bible says, "As he which hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation." We have to learn to think spiritually. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, as you think spiritually about the challenges of daily life. Here's Elizabeth Elliott to challenge and encourage us to holy living.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliott, talking with you again today about courtship. A pretty dangerous topic to talk about. I know I'm going to get some angry letters or some letters from people who are absolutely incredulous, especially when I talk about celibacy and abstinence from sexual activity as long as God keeps you single. Celibacy is not contrary to nature. That's one of the world's lies. The world would have you think that you gotta have sex. I say rubbish, baloney, balderdash, bilge. You don't gotta have sex. I used to live with jungle Indians in South America. I lived in very close contact with jungle Indians. In fact, for one whole year, I slept in the bedroom with an Indian couple. To them, there was nothing strange about this. It was a palm-leafed shack with only two rooms, one huge room where everybody else slept, and one sort of a side room where this young couple slept. They were very young. I would say the woman was maybe 17. Maybe she was about 19, and her husband was about 12. But take my word for it, they were sexually mature. Anyway, they did produce a baby during that year, and the woman questioned me about missionaries. She said, "You know, I've never seen people have so many children as missionaries. How do they do it?" Well, I was a little stymied by that. I thought the answer was pretty obvious. There's only one way to have babies, at least in those days. There was only one way. Nowadays, we hear of all these breathtaking things of genetic engineering and that sort of thing. But I didn't know what to say to her. I did ask another question. I said, "And what about you people? Don't you have that many babies?" And she said, "Well, we never have babies more than every 2 years." So I said, "Well, how do you do that?" And she laughed and she said, "Is that all you foreigners ever think about?" Using a word that's roughly equivalent to sex. "Is that all you foreigners ever think about?" And I noticed that after this girl's baby was born, her husband slept on the floor for about 6 months. Of course, she was nursing her baby, and lactation is one method of contraception, as long as you don't feed the baby anything else. I think it is a fairly safe method of contraception, not 100%, but it does work in most cases, as witness the Indians' lives themselves. They had no other forms of contraception than abstinence and lactation or breastfeeding. And I don't think I ever knew an Indian to have a baby more often than every 2 years. But they were willing to abstain, and it was custom for them to abstain during pregnancy and for as much as 6 months, at least in this one case, after pregnancy. So it is not contrary to nature. It is entirely possible for people to control themselves. I want to read some more from C.S. Lewis's book, Mere Christianity. In his chapter on Christian behavior, he says, "Surrender to all our desires obviously leads to impotence, disease, jealousies, lies, concealment, and everything that is the reverse of health, good humor, and frankness." He had been referring to the fact that nowadays people like to tell themselves that any kind of sexual activity, anywhere, anyhow, is healthy and reasonable and good-humored. Well, he's refuting that nonsense. I'm interested that he says surrender to all our desires leads to impotence, for one thing, because I heard not long ago that one of the problems that campus physicians are dealing with, surprisingly, is impotence in young men. And my theory is that when you look for satisfaction in everybody's bed, you find satisfaction in nobody's. In other words, they're getting so much sex that there's no fun left in it, and they can't get excited. To go on with C.S. Lewis, for any happiness, even in this world, quite a lot of restraint is going to be necessary. So the claim made by every desire, when it is strong, to be healthy and reasonable, counts for nothing. Every sane and civilized man must have some set of principles by which he chooses to reject some of his desires and to permit others. One man does this on Christian principles, another on hygienic principles, another on sociological principles. The real conflict is not between Christianity and nature, but between Christian principle and other principles in the control of nature. For nature, in the sense of natural desire, will have to be controlled anyway, unless you were going to ruin your whole life. The Christian principles are admittedly stricter than the others, but then we think you will get help towards obeying them, which you will not get towards obeying the others. Well, I hope you'll think about this very reasonable, logical, and brilliant man, C.S. Lewis. Every sane and civilized man must have a set of principles. And I'm going to give you a set of principles. Actually, I have about 15 things to say here on the subject of singleness. If you're single, think about the fact that celibacy is not contrary to nature. Just erase from your thinking that nonsense that the world has fed you. Offer your celibacy for the love of Christ. And by celibacy, I simply mean this requirement for today. I don't mean that you have to have a gift of celibacy whereby God has given you the word that you're never going to be married. Not too many people have that kind of assurance. But if you are single, then you must be celibate according to God's rules. And celibacy, if it's not your choice, is not your idea of what is going to make you happy, then I would say the first thing to do with it is to simply offer it for the love of Christ. Remember that there will be grace sufficient to give you supernatural power and vigor. God's grace is always sufficient for all our needs. Remember that. My grace, God says, is all you need. It gives us supernatural power. Do not give greater weight to your difficulties than they actually have. It's a temptation to all of us, isn't it, to exaggerate our problems, to feel sorry for ourselves, to make much, as Amy Carmichael said, of anything appointed. And she wrote, "If I make much of anything appointed, magnify it secretly to myself or insidiously to others, then I know nothing of Calvary love." So don't make a federal case out of your difficulties, a big deal. Remember that man is not mere flesh and blood. And by man, I'm using the generic term. We human beings are not mere flesh and blood. But we also have understanding, choice, and freedom. The next thing is to take this golden opportunity of being celibate, being free from the bonds of marriage and the responsibilities and the privileges of marriage. Take it as a golden opportunity for a closer relationship with Christ, a deeper understanding of his mystery. Don't try to ignore or despise your sexuality. Bring it willingly and gladly under the authority of Christ. Be womanly, be manly, be masculine, be feminine. Don't be afraid to accept these divine gifts. Natural desire for love of man or woman is not the sole means of human fulfillment. Let's not forget that. we sometimes feel that we cannot be fulfilled without marriage. But that's not the sole means of fulfillment. Real love, a real and demanding love, deepens and broadens our sense of responsibility, which is a sign of maturity. The measure of our maturity is the measure of our self-giving. The next thing is that all of us, whether married or single, are meant to give testimony to the mystery of Christ and the Church. This is what is behind my understanding of masculinity and femininity. It's not merely a physical distinction. It is a theological distinction, and it represents the relationship between Christ and his people. Christ is the bridegroom, and we, the Church, constitute his bride. Doesn't make any difference whether we're married or single. We must all give testimony to that mystery. The single Christian testifies to the mystery of Christ by a life wholly dedicated to the kingdom. This will give a deep knowledge of the human heart. Your sacrifice for Christ affects the whole body. Your obedience. Well, that takes me down as far as number 9 in my 15 things to think about if you're single. We don't have time for any more of them. But may God comfort your heart and assure you of his love and his holy and high purpose for your life, which will be fulfillment.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Through Gates of Splendor and The Path of Loneliness, Finding Your Way Through the Wilderness to God. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.